The Senate begins debate on a budget bill today confronting inflation and health care.
Plus, China-U.S. relations have grown tense following House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. More to come.
I'm Scott Simon.
I'm Alina Selyuk, and this is Up First from NPR News.
China launched military drills after the speaker's visit. Here's Secretary of State Anthony Blinken.
They've taken dangerous acts to a new level. The United States has conveyed to the PRC consistently and repeatedly that we do not seek and will not provoke a crisis.
Also, Brittany Griner's lawyers prepare to appeal her 9-year jail sentence. We'll hear about a potential deal to free her. Stay with us. Please, we've got the news you need to start your weekend.
It's a big day for Senate Democrats as they begin debate over their widespread bill to address health care, climate change, and lower the deficit.
All 50 members of the Democratic Conference are in agreement now over the legislation, but it's still far from being signed into law.
Joining us now is NPR political reporter Deepa Shivaram to talk us through what comes next. Deepa, good morning.
Hello.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said they're gearing up for some long nights on Capitol Hill this week. What's happening with this bill today?
Yeah, so this afternoon, Schumer is planning to introduce the bill on the floor. And because it's getting passed through a budget reconciliation process, there are some extra rules added. Both sides get up to 20 hours of debate to talk about the legislation, and then they move into what is known as Votorama. This is where senators can introduce an unlimited number of amendments to the bill, and it can take hours. Democrats are likely to yield back most of their time, so we're really just watching for how long Republicans want to drag this out into the weekend.
Getting everyone in the Democratic Conference on board wasn't an easy process either. How did that come about?
So that was the back and forth this week, whether Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema would get on board with the bill. On Thursday night, she announced she would move forward with it after a few changes were made. The first was that she wanted the part of the bill that narrowed the carried interest tax loophole to be removed. And that part essentially changed the way private equity income is taxed. And what Sinema wanted added was an excise tax on stock buybacks. She also wanted funding for drought resiliency, which other senators have also called for. But Sinema isn't the only one who's expressed reservations here. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders said this week that he doesn't believe the bill does enough to tackle issues that working class Americans are facing right now. He says there's nothing in the bill that addresses increasing the minimum wage or making childcare more affordable or eliminating student debt. And Sanders isn't likely to block the bill from passing, but he has said that he'll introduce a number of amendments on the floor that would bring up these concerns. And it might not be the last time that we hear from progressive lawmakers. When the bill goes through the House next week, progressive members there might also push back, though they have been mostly quiet so far.
If this bill passes, it could be a big win for Democrats. How has President Biden reacted so far?
This has been a pretty big portion of his domestic agenda that's set to pass, so it's looking like a good week for President Biden. He spoke a little bit about the bill at an event at the White House yesterday.
In short, this bill is a game changer for working families and our economy. I look forward to the Senate taking up this legislation and passing it as soon as possible.
And this isn't the only part of his agenda that's moved forward in recent days. He's signing into law gun control legislation prompted by recent mass shootings, a bill on semiconductors that boosts American manufacturers, and a bill on veterans benefits that provides aid to veterans exposed to toxins. And it's worth adding here that all of these measures had bipartisan support. There's a lot of momentum here for Biden already, and the Inflation Reduction Act is another point of success. For Democrats who are facing a pretty uphill midterm election in just a few months, this is a week they'll keep pointing back to.
That's NPR's Deepa Shivaram. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A note on another important story. Indiana has become the first state to pass new legislation, a near total ban on abortion. It will take effect in a few weeks, and you can get the latest on that story on your local NPR station and on NPR.org.
Tensions continue to simmer in the Taiwan Strait after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan this week.
Military drills around the island are ongoing, and the response has gone beyond just saber-rattling. Beijing cut off dialogue with the U.S. across a range of issues and even says it's imposing sanctions on Pelosi and her family.
NPR's John Ruich is in Beijing and joins us now. Thanks very much for being with us, John.
Happy to be here.
China is clearly upset and seems to take new steps every day. What's the latest?
Today, they continued with live fire drills. These things started on Thursday. China said the drills today were testing land strike and sea assault capabilities. The Taiwan military says that Chinese planes and ships were again operating in the Taiwan Strait, in some cases crossing the halfway point toward Taiwan and possibly simulating an attack on the island. Taiwan also says it detected some drones, presumably Chinese military drones, flying near smaller islands that Taiwan controls. The exercises are slated to run until midday tomorrow, local time.
And tell us about the step China took to cut off dialogue with the U.S. on various issues. What seems to be going on there?
Yeah, China yesterday announced that it was ending various forms of military-to-military cooperation and dialogue altogether and suspending cooperation in areas including anti-narcotics, transnational crime, and climate change, which is a biggie. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, who's visiting the Philippines today, called shutting down cooperation like that irresponsible. And on climate, he said China's not punishing the U.S., but it's really punishing the world.
China walking away from climate talks could have lasting consequences for the future of the region, the future of our planet.
John, how are people you've spoken with in China and Taiwan taking this latest crisis?
Well, online in China, there seems to be a ton of support for Beijing's reaction to Pelosi's visit, and even a sense among many that China should be doing more. Of course, the internet here is monitored, it's censored, it's curated even. You never know exactly how representative it is. In the conversations I've had with folks around Beijing, though, you know, people do tend to think that Pelosi's visit was provocative. They think a reaction was certainly warranted, but they also know that Taiwan's a long game for China and that they don't think this is worth going to war over, frankly. In Taiwan, by all accounts, life is just going on as normal. Listen to what journalist Brian Hugh in Taipei had to say.
Things are pretty calm, actually. Things are pretty normal. People are not panicking in the streets just yet.
So it's calm and normal. You know, he says he's even heard people cracking jokes like, hey, if they're going to invade, we might as well go out for a good meal right now, things like that. So, you know, Taiwan's been living with the threat of Chinese drills and invasion for a long time, and they're used to it.
John, where do you see all of this headed?
Well, more from China is expected. You know, China announced today they're going to hold military exercises up the coast from Taiwan, you know, in between China and South Korea and the sea there. Drills on the coast are pretty commonplace. There's no direct link between these and the Taiwan crisis, but maybe it's a way for them to sort of step back from the island and continue a little of the saber rattling. Longer term, it does seem like this whole crisis is going to color everything in China-U.S.-Taiwan relations. The Chinese and U.S. governments just don't trust each other, right? The relationship is much more competitive and confrontational than it's been in years. And even before this crisis, they were having difficulty finding ways to communicate constructively and cooperate in areas where they have aligned interests, like the climate. This crisis just makes the relationship even worse.
And here's John Ruich in Beijing. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been a hard week for Brittany Griner and her family.
On Thursday, a Moscow court sentenced the basketball star to 9 years in a Russian prison for carrying less than a gram of cannabis oil into Russia.
But there are hints Moscow and Washington, D.C. may be moving towards a possible prisoner swap to free her. And NPR's Charles Maines has been following the trial and its aftermath. He joins us from Moscow. Charles, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to do it.
First of all, you were in the courtroom when that verdict was read. What was that like? What was Brittany Griner's reaction?
Well, you know, Griner has been really composed throughout this ordeal, at least from what I've been able to observe, which made moments where she gets emotional rather striking, like in her final statement to the court on Thursday, when she expressed remorse for what she called an honest mistake that she said had embarrassed supporters not only in the U.S., but also in what she called her second home with her team UGMK in Ekaterinburg, or ECAT, as she calls it for short here.
I want to apologize to my teammates, my club, UGMK, the fans, and the city of ECAT for my mistake that I made and the embarrassment that I brought onto them.
You can certainly hear emotion in her voice.
Yeah, and you know, as to the verdict itself, of course it was a blow. The judge showed little interest in the defense's arguments for leniency, ignoring Griner's guilty plea, her contributions to Russian basketball, or the fact that the cannabis oil was issued legally in the U.S. by a doctor for chronic pain, and that Griner had never failed a drug test. You know, none of that mattered. The judge issued a 9-year sentence, just shy of the maximum.
Of course, President Biden condemned the ruling and says Brittany Griner is a political pawn. Yesterday, both Secretary of State Blinken and his Russian counterpart suggested the two sides are ready to talk about a prisoner swap. What do we know about that?
You know, well, Secretary Blinken and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov were both in a meeting in Cambodia this week, and there Lavrov was asked about Griner and said, look, a diplomatic channel for prisoner exchanges exists already. President Biden and President Vladimir Putin agreed to one back in 2020, and Lavrov said Russia remains open to discussions there, provided they're out of the public eye. Now, separately, Blinken said, okay, that's where we'll press our case, but Lavrov also took a dig at Blinken, saying, if Griner is so important, why did Blinken ignore me as we sat just a few feet from one another at meetings? And it just speaks to the animosity in the U.S.-Russian relationship these days, even as they try and, in theory, cut a deal.
Charles, any feeling of what the time could be like, weeks, days, months before a swap might be worked out?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, the U.S. made what Blinken calls its substantial proposal to Moscow weeks ago. That's to free Griner and another jailed American, former Marine Paul Whelan. By all accounts, that involves the release of Viktor Bout, a Russian arms dealer currently in prison in Illinois. But the Kremlin, however, has insisted that Griner's trial first had to run its course, which brings us, of course, to the present. But there are complicating factors here. You know, for example, Griner's lawyers say they'll pursue an appeal. But does that keep the trial alive in the eyes of the Russian government? Also, the larger issue is Russia actually open to the U.S. offer as it stands. It's not lost on the Kremlin that President Biden faces intense public pressure to get Griner home. Moscow is reportedly pressing for a second Russian national to be included in the exchange over U.S. objections, and you know, which suggests that the Kremlin may be testing just how badly the White House needs a deal.
And there's Charles Maines in Moscow. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that's Up First for Saturday, August 6, 2022. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Alina Selyuk. Up First is back tomorrow with a story about a man in eastern Ukraine who has captivated a U.S. audience with his daily accounts of what his life looks like in a war zone. Follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And for more news, interviews, books, music, sometimes just plain fun, you can find us on the radio.
Weekend Edition, Saturday and Sunday mornings. Find your NPR station at stations.npr.org.